We are, last week we spoke about Ruth's kind of affirmation of her loyalty to Naomi and her journey back. We talked about in the context of what we called conversion. Technically, that's not really a term. We'll see that as we go along, but her embrace of Naomi and Naomi's people and Naomi's God, Amechami, which eventually allows her, enables her to enter into the community of Israel. In the language of Chumash, means she enters into Kahal Hashem, to the congregation of God. When that happens, we'll see as we move forward. In the meantime, I want to pick up where the story left off. The two of them returned to Bethlehem. Come to Bethlehem, and everybody's shocked. Shocked because of their poverty, shocked because of their that they dare to show their face again, shocked because of who they are. Don't call me Naomi, which means pleasant, call me Mara, which means bitter. God has been bitter to me. Why should you? I left full. I returned empty. Empty both in terms of financial position as well as family, husband, two sons. Call me Mara. So Naomi comes back together with Ruth HaMoaviyah, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, returning from Sde Moav, Vehema Bao Bethlehem Bitchilat Ktzir Sorim. They return to Bethlehem at the beginning of the harvest, of the barley harvest, and that will be the subject of Perek Bet, we'll get to in a moment. Just an observation here in Pasuk Bet, everything we said last week about Ruth, her loyalty, her commitment, her conversion, etc., that's all post facto. We get it. We've seen it. We know where the story ends. At the moment that she returns together with Naomi, however, there's the gathering of the people of Beit Lechem. They all stand there with the jaws open. And then Naomi goes about her business together with Ruth, who is still described here as Ruth HaMoaviyah, Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, who returned with her from the fields of Moab, referencing Moabite twice, right? Moaviyah and Sde Moab. The notion of how the people perceived Ruth is going to become the major theme of the rest of the book. And so I want to make sure that we point out that in the eyes of the people of Bethlehem, she's still Ruth HaMoaviyah, and that's a major issue for us as we move forward. Okay, that brings us to Perek Bet. Naomi had a relative. This is foreshadowing or setting up what will come later. We are told that Naomi has a relative by the name of Elimelech, in the name of Boaz, from the family of Elimelech. Ish Gibor Chayil is very wealthy, very powerful, very important. We'll see what he has. He owns the field that eventually they will go to. But for now, that's just setting up what comes next. Vatomer Ruth HaMoaviyah el Naomi. Ruth HaMoaviyah. On this text version of the Megillah, which I'm not using now just because it's harder to, it's smaller print, I highlighted every place Ruth is called Moaviyah or her name appears, meaning sometimes she's called Ruth, sometimes she's called Ruth HaMoaviyah. I just put them in bold. It's worthwhile going through that just to kind of see how that impacts the dialogue. I'm not going to do it for us now because it'll take a long time, but you have it, you can print it out, and you can see it kind of impacts the theme as you move through the book. Let me go now to the fields and glean amongst the ears of grain, right? There's a notion of leket. There's a notion of the paupers, the poor family, poor people who would go to the fields of Israel. And there's certain halachot in terms of what they can glean from that which is left behind by the harvesters, right? The people who are harvesting the fields. It's the time of the harvest of the barley. So she says, let me go and gather and glean like the rest of them. To glean means that there are certain places for the poor to go. I'll find favor in the eyes of the owner of the field. And so Naomi says, fine, so go. She goes, she gleans in the field where the reapers are, meaning people who are reaping the field, and in air quotes, there are no such thing as air quotes in Tanakh, right? You can't put things in air quotes, but it happened to be by chance, in air quotes, that the field belonged to Boaz.
Boaz
shows up from Bethlehem. She says, and he says to the harvesters, to the reapers, he says, God is with you, God, blessed be you, God.
Boaz
says to his servant, tell me, to whom is this young woman? She is a Moabite who has returned with Naomi from the fields of Moab. She came, she said, let me glean amongst the sheaves. Achrei hakotzrim, behind the reapers, v'tavo v'tamod me'az haboker v'adata zeshivta b'ayit mountain. She's sitting here from morning till now, and she won't leave. She won't even sit down.
V'yomer Boaz el Rut, halo shamat biti, al telechi lilkot b'sadeh acher.
My daughter, listen to me, my daughter. Don't go glean in some other field. You stay here. And stay close to my maidens. Keep your eyes on the field, which they reap. Go with them. I've commanded my young servants not to touch you. If you're thirsty, go to the vessels. They will give you water to drink. And she is so moved by this extraordinary act of kindness. Vatipol paneh, she falls on her face. Vatishtachu arza, she bows to the ground. She says, "Madua matzatichem benecha kireni venachinochliya? Why do you acknowledge me? I am nothing but a foreigner. How come you're so kind to me?" Ve'yan boaz ve'yomar lahu ged ugadli kol asher asit et chamotech achrei motishech v'tazvi yavich ve'imech ve'eretz moladetech v'telchi al am asher lo yadat tmol shelshom.
I know all that you've done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband, and how you left your father and mother's home and your land and your birthplace, and you came to a people you never knew, not yesterday, the day before. Yishalem Hashem palech udim maskurotech shlemami Hashem elokei Yisrael shabat lachasot tachat knafav. May God repay you for your kindness and complete, and may God acknowledge that you have come to seek shelter under God's wings, under the wings of Israel. Right? This is an expression of Shabbat HaChasot Tachat Knafav as a kind of embrace of the Jewish people. The God of Israel under whose wings you come to seek refuge. You speak to me, you've comforted me, you speak to me like one of your maidservants, and I am not even worthy of being one of your maidservants.
Boaz and said to her at the time of the meal, come and eat bread. It's a little bit of bread.
She came, she sat behind the reapers, she ate and was satisfied.
She got up to go back and glean. Boaz commanded his servant, saying, let her glean among the sheaves. Do not embarrass her, refuse her. You know what? Drop a few extra for her. Let her glean them. Don't rebuke her. By the time she finished in the evening, she had gleaned an epha of barley. Then she comes back to her mother-in-law, and she shows her what she had gleaned, and Naomi is very impressed. Where did you go? Whoever it was that allowed you to do this, let him be blessed. And she says to her exactly what happened, and that the man's name was Boaz. Oh, Naomi says, "V'tomer Naomi lechalata baruch laHashem shelazav chazdot hachayim et hamitim. Blessed is God who has not abandoned the living or the deceased,
meaning she recognized the name and understood right away, Batomer, Lo Naomi Karov Lanu Aish Miko Aleinu. This man is from one of our relatives, meaning in line to redeem us, our land. He told me to stay close to his servants. Adim kiluat kol katsuya sheli. So she said, "Great." It's very good that you go with his maidens. No one else should harm you in another field. And so she stayed in the field through the barley harvest and through the wheat harvest, which, by the way, places us between the wheat harvest, the barley harvest, and the wheat harvest, places us smack in the time period of Sfirat HaOmer, because the barley harvest on Pesach and the wheat harvest on Shavuot. And you understand why the Megillah, one of the reasons it's read on Shavuot. Okay. I read through the whole parak. It's a very important parak. I read through it quickly. I apologize for that. If you have a chance to read it on your own, you can. I want to jump straight into the question at hand, because reading it takes time. And the question at hand is very simple. Let's start from the text. Boaz comes to the field. Name Boaz Bami Bet Lechem. He greets the servants of the field, Hashem. His immediate question is, Lemi Hanara Hazot? To whom is this young woman? Chazal were very bothered by the question. Right? There's a whole field of people. There's a field of Na'amim, and there's a field of Kutzvim, and there's a field of Melakatim, and there's a field of Na'am. It's a whole field of people. Is it appropriate for Boaz to seek out, to inquire of a young maiden? Is that appropriate? Meaning, essentially, the Gemara is asking the question, what caught Boaz's eye? So here's the answer in the Gemara. Today's shiur is basically going to be an analysis of an approach that appears in the Gemara or in the Medrash. Then we're going to go back to the text and analyze whether or not this works in the text, and then we're going to put it all together. But Amar Rabbi Elazar, Dvar Chochma Ra'aba, he saw in her a conduct representing a unique wisdom or unique understanding, namely, Shtei Shibolin Loketet, Shalosh Shibolin Inna Loketet. She would take three stalks. If three stalks were there, she would not take them. But if there's two stalks, she would take them. V'matnita Tana, Dvar Tzniut V'Aba, in the Mishnah it says, or the Brayta, it says that he saw in her special modesty. Omdot M'umad Naflot M'Yushav, if the stalks were standing, she would glean them while standing, but if they are on the floor, rather than bend over to get them, which would be a violation of modesty in the conduct of Israel, she would actually sort of sit down and remain dignified and modest. Chochma and Tzniut. The Chochma referenced here is actually a halacha, it's a Mishnah in Peah, that with regards to the protocol, the etiquette of Leket, Shnei omarim shikha u'shlosha enan shikha. If two sheaves of wheat are remaining, that's considered, right? There's two halachas of, or there's three, but we're going to talk about two, that have to do with, that are relevant to the field. One is called leket, where there are ears of corns, individual stalks as the harvesters are going through and cutting. So if they cut three or more, if they leave behind three or more, then you know, the harvesters, the leket, the malakatim, were not allowed to take them. That was considered owned by the balabayit. But one or two, they could take. Same thing with the sheaves of wheat. If there were shikros, whole bundles of wheat, if there was one left or two left, that would be considered forgetting. But three would be something which the balabayit would want, would be makbid about, and therefore not allowed. So he saw that she understood that halacha, that she would only take one or two and stalks of wheat or barley and not three, because that was not allowed. Or she would, same thing with shikha. And similarly, with regards to the question of tzniut, he saw that she conducted herself in a uniquely modest fashion, which would make sense given the fact that she was embracing Jewish life, embracing the religion, right? Naomi would have ostensibly taught her what it is to have chokhmah and tzniut, and so Boaz was attracted to her unique conduct. That's the assumption of the Gemara. What's really going on, right? What's behind the assumption, the question in the Gemara? What's going on in the question of the Gemara is that when Boaz comes into the field, and this we're going to sort of begin to explore and unpack this discussion, he comes into the field, Vayomer Boaz l'nara, nitzava l'kotzim l'mi ha'nara hazot. Immediately, the Nar's response is, Vayomer ha'nar ha'nitzava l'kotzim, nara mo'aviya yeshava im no'mi misde Moav. Immediately, he comes, she says, she's a Moabite. She came back with the fields with no'mi, and she came from Moav. So at the core of the question of the Gemara, I think, lies the question of her status. And that's why I think this discussion or this question is much more than what caught her eye, his eye, much more than whether or not she was sort of conducting herself differently than the other gleaners. I think that there was a much bigger issue going on. And I suspect that Boaz came to a field that was typically very calm and quiet, and he saw that there was a little bit of a tumult going on in this field. And so he asked the Na'ar, who is she, the subject of this tumult? And the response is, she is a Moabite. Now, that wasn't what he asked, right? He didn't ask her what she was. He asked who she was. And the response that he got was what she is, namely, Nara Moaviyahi. She is a Moabite. Why is that relevant to the issue? So it's relevant to the issue because the protocol of Israel was, up until the time of Chazal, until many, many generations later, but the protocol of the laws of Matnot Aniyim, of gifts to the poor, were that that was an internal matter to the Jewish people. It was intended to provide to the poor of Israel. And so the halacha is that there is a restriction that you weren't allowed to provide that matnot aniyim, those gifts to the poor, to Gentiles who would come to the field to glean. That wasn't allowed. Until many years later, in which they allowed it not because of the original biblical law, but because what the Gemara refers to as mipnei darkei shalom, sake of peace, for the sake of international relations, right? It doesn't look nice to say, okay, only Jews allowed to glean here. That's at some point or another, that doesn't ring well. But certainly in the context of Tanakh, the notion was that there was ein monin yakumi matnot elu, that there is no position. You can't provide the Gentiles these gifts. And so when she comes to glean from the poor, from the field, she came, she wants to clean, and she's been here all day. And the response of the people of the Na'ar to Boaz is, she's a Moabite. Meaning, translate that now into perspective, right? He basically says to Boaz, who came to see what is normally a very quiet routine field, and suddenly there's a Moabite there, and everybody is all uptight. And he says to Boaz, she's a Moabite, meaning we got to find a way to get rid of her, got to find a way to throw her out, right? She doesn't belong here. She's taking the gleanings that belong to the Israelite women. I want to glean, and she's here all day. And Boaz says to Ruth, calls her over and says, okay, Ruth, guess what? Here you may glean and here you may stay. And you can just see the jaw drop in the eyes of all of the kutzrim and the na'arim standing around, expecting Boaz to follow in line with everybody else and get rid of her. And Boaz turns to her and says, lo ta'avuri mizeh, you stay here. You stay close to the gleaners. You are here under my protection. And in
I've commanded my servants not to touch you, not to harm you, not to push you. You have full access here.
And she falls on her face. And she doesn't understand how to process this. And she says to Boaz,
why have you recognized me such?
But I am but a foreigner.
To which Boaz responds and says,
I heard the whole story. I know how you abandoned your family and you came with Naomi and you came back and you embraced this people, etc. I've heard the whole story. You've come under the sheltering wings of God. And therefore, I acknowledge that you are part of the people of Israel. That's exactly what he says to her. In other words, the heart of this conversation, at the heart of this discussion, is exactly everything we talked about last week, a recognition of the status of Ruth. They're all calling her a Moabite, and Boaz turns to her and says, you are not a Moabite anymore. You are part of the people of Israel. You have come to seek refuge under the sheltering wings of the Almighty. And she hears Boaz's response,
you have comforted me, and you have spoken to me as if to a maidservant.
Shivcha is not a nochriya, right? She's kind of adjusted her position. Before she described herself as a nochriya, now suddenly she's describing herself as a shivcha. Later on, she'll describe herself as an ama, which is essentially a maidservant for the purpose of marriage. In chapter 3. And then that's where Boaz instructs everybody to leave her alone and let her be and let her stay in the field. So what you get in this conversation and what you're hearing in this discussion about what caught Boaz's eye, what you're hearing in this conversation is essentially the issue of the status of Ruth, status both in terms of the sociological issue we talked about over the last couple of weeks, but she's a Moabite, but she's from the land of the enemy, but also in terms of the status of her being able to enter into the congregation of God. Boaz's response was very clear that you have come to seek shelter under God's protection, meaning you are considered a member of the Jewish people. And this phrase, Pasuk Yud Bet, Yishalem Hashem Polech Otimas Kotech Shlema Meim Hashem Alokei Yisrael Ashebat Lachasot Tachat Knafav. It's very powerful. So what's at the heart of this discussion? The heart of this discussion lies a very famous debate, which the Gemara will articulate as lengthy sugya in Gemara and Yevamot, really at the heart of Megillat Rut. I'm sure we've all heard it, we understand it, we've heard it before. Namely, the issue of the status of converts from Moab. Leaving aside for a moment everything we talked about in terms of Moab and Ammon being at war with Israel, etc., just from a what I would call a halachic perspective. Okay? From a halachic perspective. What do you mean from a halachic perspective? He says to her, Boaz says to Ruth, sorry, I'm just jumping pages here, so I apologize about that, that you have come to a people that you did not know yesterday or the day before. Lo yadat moshel shom. Hearing those words, Chazal offer a very famous statement. I'm going to skip source 6 for 1 second. I'll come back to it. A very famous statement that, I'm just going to jump to the end for a second, Yerushalmi Nivamot, Boaz hints to Ruth at this moment that Ilu bat etzleinu met moshel shom layinu mekablim otach. You're lucky you came today, says Boaz, because had you come yesterday, the day before, you would never have been accepted. Why are you lucky you came today? Says the Mefarshim, because adayin lo nitchatsha halacha l'hayom. There was a new halacha. There was a new innovation in the understanding of the halacha about converts from Moab that had just been introduced into the Beit Midrash this morning, says the Gemara. Had you come yesterday, then nobody would have accepted your conversion because we had never learned the halacha of male converts, not female converts. Similarly, in the Psikta, it says, "Ilu bat atzlenu mit Moshe Shom lo yinu mekavlim otach shadayin lo nitchadsha halacha," because yesterday this new halacha had not yet been taught, not yet been articulated, accepted. Amoni v'lo amonit, Moavi v'lo amoavit. When the Torah said you can't accept converts from Ammon and Moab, it meant the males, not the females. That halacha had not yet been innovated, and therefore you wouldn't have been accepted. So you're lucky, Ruth, that you came today. Earth that means is a question, and we're going to explore that now. So what's at the heart of this? I'm sorry for going quickly, but there's, unless we want to take this to several weeks after Shavuot, I'm trying to deal with multiple issues at the same time. So let's go back to the text. This core of the issue lies in the Psukim in Devarim, Perachav Gimel, in which the Torah says quite clearly, Lo yavo amoni umoavi bikal Hashem. An Ammonite, a Moabite, may not enter into the congregation of the Lord, even up to 10 generations. Gam dor asiri lo yavo bikal Hashem ad olam, for eternity. Converts from Ammon and Moab, forbidden. Okay? Why? There are two reasons given. One, because they were inhospitable when you left Egypt. We talked about the Sodom character of Moab being carried on by the people of Moab. And because they tried to kill you, right? They hired Bilam ben Baor to curse you. And therefore, lo tidrash levam v'tovatam koyimechayach. To which the Gemara raises a fascinating conversation. Now, in classic style of Chazal, which is to raise a question in a midrashic sense, or raise a text discussion in a midrashic context in a place where its reference is really only hidden or alluded to, but there are other places in Tanakh where the question is much more directly addressed. When Yerushalmi refers to it, Divrei Torah aniyim b'mekumam v'ashirim b'mekom acher, very often Torah words are sparse or poor in one place and rich or enriched elsewhere. The meaning of the following. Gemara in Yevamos addresses this question of the status of converts from Ammon and Moab head on. And the Mishnah says, Amoni Moavi Asurim Visurani Suralam Avanikevotem Utarot Miyad. Male converts are forbidden, female converts are permissible, even though the text makes no reference to any such distinction. And the Gemara on that Mishnah raises this issue in the context of a whole conversation between Shaul HaMelech and Doeg HaEdomi and Avner Ben-Ner, a whole conversation between the personalities of Shmuel Aleph. If you studied Shmuel Aleph, these names will be familiar to you. If not, then don't worry about it. But we're not going to go through the whole text. You have it on the source page. You can go through it at length. But essentially, the Gemara raises the question, Shaul sees David in chapter 17, and he fights the Plishti, and he says to Avner, Mizehana, ben Mizehana. Who is this young man? Which Chazal understood to be, midrashically, a reference to, I don't know who he is, I've never seen him before, which is very strange because he appeared in the previous chapter as a servant of Shaul. So therefore the Gemara says this is what he meant by the question. What he meant by the question is not who is he knows exactly who he is, but Emi Peretz Atayim Zerachati, what's his lineage? Does it come from Peretz or does it come from Zerach? Yehuda, Tamar, Zerach, Peretz, two sons. One was promised Malchus, one not. If he comes from Peretz, I'm in trouble, right? This guy's more capable than I am, and he could be a threat to my kingdom. If he comes from Zerach, I'm not so worried. So he's a big, important person, but he's not going to take the kingdom away from me, says the Medrash. To which Doeg HaEdomi and Avner begin to enter into a conversation. And Doeg HaEdomi is a Rasha Marusha. The man is responsible for the execution of the entire city of Nob and all the Kohanim. So in this Midrashic discussion, you understand this is not what's in the text. This is the Midrashic embellishment of the story. All right. Doeg says to him, "You want to know whether he is capable, whether he's right to be a king, or whether he's worthy as the yichlos of kingship. Why don't you ask a different question? Why don't you ask him if he's a Jew? Why don't you ask him if he's pasul? Why don't you ask if he's bechlal tainted with lineage that would make him inappropriate? Why? He comes from Rut, the Moabite, which means that he's not accepted because you're not allowed to accept converts from Moab, and Rut is his great-great-grandmother. To which Avner ben Ner, Shaul's general, says, "What are you talking about? We learned in a Mishnah, which will be written in about 1,000 years. Amoni v'lo Amonit, Moavi v'lo Moavit. Amoni. It says Amoni and Moavi. It says somebody from Moab, somebody from Amon, meaning only the males, not the females." To which Doeg responds and says, "What are you talking about? If that's true, can you say the same thing about a mamzer? It also talks about a mamzer in the parasha. Are you going to say mamzer and not a mamzeret?" To which, you understand, a mamzer is somebody born from a marriage, a relationship which is an isur karet. To which Avner responds, "No, mamzer is unique because it's a mumzar. It implies an objectionable kind of disqualification." To which Doeg says, "What are you talking about? It also says mitzvi. Are you going to say the Egyptians also included the male Egyptians and not the female Egyptians?" So at that point, Avner says, "But it's different." What's different? I'm going to explain all this in a second. I just want to run through the Gemara. To which Avner says, "This is different. Why? Because the text tells me why they're not allowed to accept converts from Ammon and Moab. Unlike Mitzrayim and unlike a mamzer, the text says about Ammon and Moab, because they didn't come to greet you with bread and water. They were inhospitable. But that only applies to the males. I would not have anticipated the women to come out and greet Israel with bread and water. That was the role for the men. And therefore, the Torah's disqualification is only over the males, not over the females." To which Doeg says, wait a second. Why didn't the men greet the men and the women greet the women? If the Torah says the inhospitable character was part of the nature of Moab, then it should apply equally to the men and the women. And at that point, ishtik, there was silence. Avner didn't know what to respond. I'm going to skip the next piece of the discussion. They go to the Beis Medrash. Shaul says, go talk to the Beis Medrash, find out what's going on. They come to the Beis Medrash. They want to make a public declaration about David, that he's posel, that he's a mamzer, that he's a child of a mamzer. Finally, up stands an individual who's part of the story, Amasa ben Yeter. Stands up, he sticks a sword in the ground, and he says, Chagar charbo ki Yishmael ve'amar, kol mi she'eno shomea halacha zu, yidaker b'cheref. If you don't accept this halacha, you'll be stabbed by the sword. Meaning, don't argue with me. I'm telling you what the halacha is, don't argue. What's he saying? Kach mekublani, listen very carefully. Kach mekublani mi beit dino shel Shmuel haramati. I have this on tradition from the Bet Din of none other than Shmuel Hanavi himself. That Amoni v'lo Amonit, Moavi v'lo Moavit, that it only applies to the males, not the females. The question was asked, why didn't the women come to greet the women and the men come to greet the men? To that answer, that question, they have an answer. Kol kvuda bat melech p'nima. The women were tzenua. The women were modest. What did the Gemara say about Boaz, who saw in Ruth Chochmah and Tzniut? The women were modest, and therefore, kol kvudah bat melech p'nima. Okay, that's the Medrash. Now we could unpack this Medrash over 3 hours. We're not going to do that. All I really wanted to pull out of this Medrash is an understanding of two things. Number one, that the question about Ruth's status is still debated multiple generations later. Number one. And number two, the issue revolves around the question of whether the prohibition against Ammon and Moab is related to the fact that they were nations like Mitzrayim, or inherently mamzerim because they were born from Lot and his daughters. Is it an intrinsic psul of mamzerut like Lot and his daughters, or is it more a subject of a nationality, or even maybe a cultural historical issue, namely they were inhospitable, they're not nice people, right? What's the nature of this disqualification? And we're going to come to that question in a second. But understand that what Chazal put into the story of Doeg and Avner and Shaul and David in chapter 17 of Shmuel Aleph, what Chazal introduced in the Medrash actually appears in the text of Tanakh itself, in a different context, which is very common in Tanakh. Namely, if you go a chapter later, they come to David with an offer to David of marriage, either to Merav, or eventually when Shaul refused to give him Merav's hand in marriage, he ends up marrying Michal. And at that moment, David's response is fascinating, because David's response is, "Vayomer David el Shaul, mi anochi umichayai umimishpachat avi biYisrael ki yayeh chatan lamelech. Who am I? Who is my family that I should be the son-in-law to the king?" And when that offer to Merav is rescinded and the offer to Michal is given, they come back to him and they said, "Vayidavu avdei Shaul bozne David et hazorim eile." Vayomer David. David responds and says, "Hanekala b'enichem mitchaten b'melach. Is it so easy, a light thing, to become the king's son-in-law? V'anochi ish rash v'nikle, and I am but a poor and insignificant man." Now, it's possible that David is being modest.
Being political.
Right? But it's also possible that we have to recognize where David is coming from. David comes from the family of Peretz, descended through Nachshon ben Aminadab, who was the Nasi of Shevet Yehudah, and from Salmon, who was one of the founders of the city of Beit Lechem. And from Boaz, who for all accounts was Ishki Borchaya, was a great man, wealthy man, significant man, member of the Sanhedrin of the city of Beit Lechem. All of that's in the lineage of David. He comes from a lineage of Malchus. He comes from a lineage of kingship, because kingship was promised to Peretz. And of such a person to describe himself as Ish Rash V'Nikle, poor man and insignificant, or to describe himself as from a family that is of nothing, of unworthiness, Ki Yayeh Chatan LaMelech, can only be understood properly if you realize that after the story of Ruth, there is an extraordinary falling out with the family of Ruth and Boaz. The descendants of Ruth and Boaz, until David comes along, are not significant families. They've been, in a sense, derailed. Right? They've been, in a sense, distanced, because the question of Moaviv and Moaviyah has remained unresolved, despite the fact that Chazal say that the issue was resolved in the Beit Midrash that morning. We'll see what that means. But the reality is that the issue remained unresolved. And for multiple generations, Ruth's status as a convert from Moab, where the Torah says you're not allowed to accept converts from Moab, remained a blemish on David's record for three generations. And it doesn't take more than two generations, really, for a family to fall out of kind of significance within the tribes of Israel. So the question of the status of converts from Moab is an enormous question, and it revolves around the psukim in Devarim Chav Gimel. I read you before, we looked at some of these psukim, right? This section here in the middle. But what the Gemara is really doing is recognizing the fact that the story of Ammon and Moab is sandwiched between two other restrictions. The prohibition of a mamzer is the verse prior to it. The pasuk says, "Lo yavo mamzer bikal Hashem." Mamzer cannot enter the congregation of the Lord. You cannot. Right? Mamzer is prohibited forever, generations to come. Male, female makes no difference. And in that same breath, the Torah says, Lo yavo amoni u'moavi b'kal Hashem gam dor asiri lo yavo b'kal Hashem. It's formulated in exactly the same way. So the Torah's prohibition of Amon and Moab looks very similar, sounds very similar to the prohibition of Mamzer, which makes sense given the fact that it's Lot and his daughters. On the other hand, there's a reason given for the prohibition of Amon and Moab, and that reason has to do with the historical context, the historical events related to Amon and Moab. When we left Egypt, they were inhospitable to us. Okay, well, maybe only the men were inhospitable. What about the women? We don't know anything about the women. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. I understand that this was a core debate. How to understand the psukim was the debate, and how to understand Moab. At the end of the day, it comes back to the question of what was the nature of, it's a historical question, what was the nature of the behavior of Amon and Moab? When the Torah says, because they did not greet you with bread and water, they were inhospitable, they were carrying forward the character of Sodom in their behavior, was that just the men, or did that include the women too? That's the debate. In other words, to put it very simply, the women of Moab, were they being modest or were they being cruel? When they didn't come to greet the children of Israel, neither did the men. The men, I get, the men are stone-like. But the women, were they being modest, kol kvoda bat melech pnima, or were they being cruel? That's the Gemara's question. Where do you put Amon and Moab? Are they mamzerim, like Lot and his daughters, or were they like a nation like Edom and Mitzrayim, etc.? This is a historical question. And the problem is, how do you resolve a historical question? How do you resolve a question about what happened 500 years ago? How do you resolve a question about what is the character of the Moabite women? Were they cruel like the husbands, or were they modest like the women of Israel? Right. So the answer is, the only way to resolve such a question is a historical precedent. I need to meet somebody from Moab. I need to meet a Moabite woman. I need to ask her, are you hospitable and just modest, or are you inhospitable and cruel? Who are you? What are you? That's the only way to resolve this question. It's a historical question. What is the nature of the women of Moab?
Well, excuse me. Why do you say that it's a historical question? I think the idea is to give legitimacy to the House of David.
No. I'm not going there. I absolutely not going to go there. I'm not going to go there for many reasons. It's got nothing to do with giving legitimacy to the House of David. I don't accept that interpretation. We're dealing with a sefer written by a Navi at the end of the day. I do believe that it's about understanding Ruth. If it's a historical question, the Gemara says back and forth, what was the nature of the women of Moab? We have no way of knowing. We have no way of knowing because there's been no contact. There's been no interaction with the women of Ammon and Moab. The very first female from Moab the people of Israel ever met was Ruth. Everybody else, they met on the battlefield. There's been no interaction between the countries, between the nations.
Didn't they meet Midian and Moab by Bilam?
Okay, that's not a good precedent, right? If Midian, yes. The daughters of Midian, yes. The daughters of Moab, not so much. If the daughters of Midian were like the daughters of Moab, if the daughters of Moab were like the daughters of Midian, that's also a problem, right? 100%. So comes along the Yerushalmi and says that the law, the resolution of this question of Moaviva, lo Moaviyah, was determined that morning in the Beit Midrash. What do you mean that morning in the Beit Midrash? That morning it happened to be that Boaz got up in the Beit Midrash and taught them a new halacha, and then suddenly they met Ruth. So listen to the Torah Tmima. It's an unbelievable comment of the Torah Tmima. He says, Darish beremez shehi haita harishona sheshava Moav ledat Yisrael. The very first precedent they ever encountered of somebody from Moab coming into the people of Israel was Ruth. And therefore, she determined the precedent. Ima nitchatcha halacha. She determined the precedent. Because for all the centuries from the Torah until now, the question remained unresolved. Did the Torah's reason for the prohibition of Ammon and Moab, which was that they were inhospitable, they were Sodom-like, did that apply to the women as well? That question had no way of being resolved until you came face to face with a precedent, with an example, with a representative. And the very first representative that they ever encountered was Ruth. And so Ruth becomes the story of, it's not about to legitimate her. It's about she is the subject of the story. It's her status, it's her story which determines a change in the halacha about Moavi and Moaviyah because of who she was and what she was. And that's where the rest of the shir is going to, well, we only have 10 minutes, but that's where I want to go to in the rest of the shir, to understand what Boaz saw in Ruth that enabled them to determine a complete transformation of this halacha. And so that's really the question. What is the nature of the people of Moab? So let's come back to the question with which we began, namely, what did Boaz see in Ruth? Remember that Boaz, according to the Gemara, Boaz saw two things in Ruth. Some behavior that caught his attention, Chochmah and Tzniut. Chochmah, two stalks she collected, not three. Tzniut, she was very tzenua. She would sit on the floor rather than bend over. Okay, so let's see what's going on. The Medrash is even more detailed. The Medrash says that all the other women would pick up their skirts. She'd let down her skirt. A whole discussion. You're welcome to read the Midrash. It's fascinating. But I want to come back to the text. And let's ask the question. Chazal says, let's take them one at a time. Chochmah. Wisdom. How much did she collect? Okay, so now we're going to come back to the text and look at the text inside. Let's start from the beginning. Remember, what is the halacha? The halacha says that two is considered leket, three is not considered leket. The two stalks, that's all you're entitled to collect. Two stalks at a time. All right. Let's come to Pasuk Vav. Vayomer Boaz l'Naron nitzav l'kotzrim l'mi anara azot. Who is she? Vayan ha'nara nitzav l'kotzrim vayomar naram ovaya yashami mishte Moab. She is in Moabite. Vatomer ala katana va'asafti ba'omarim. And she came and she said, I'm going to gather together, glean together the omarim. What's an omer? An omer is a pile, a sheave of wheat, a gathering of a pile of wheat, in other words, or barley, whatever the harvest is, where they would take the gleanings, and they would take the harvest, and they would make piles of them, right? And then they would dry them out, and then they would collect them. Asafti omerim, she says, I want to gather together these piles. Achoya kotzvim. And she's been here all day. You can't get rid of her. And then Boaz has his famous speech to her where he says, go, that's fine, you're allowed to stay and do as you wish. Let's take a look what happens at the end. Vatakom lelaket, she got up to glean. Vayitzav Boaz et na'arav lemor. Boaz turned, actually, let's, Vayitzav Boaz et na'arav lemor. Gam ben ha'omarim tilaket v'lo tachlimua. Turns to his narim and he says, you know what? If she wants to glean among the piles and the sheaves of wheat, don't worry about it. Just let her be. What's that all about? She begins to, continues to glean until the evening. And he comes back, and she comes back, and turns out that she was able to glean an equivalent of an ephah of barley. So let's understand what an ephah of barley is. The word Omer appears elsewhere in the Torah, specifically in the context of the story of the man, if you remember. Omer la Gilgolet. The definition of an Omer in the context of the measurement was that an Omer was a amount of food, in the case of the story of the man, it was about man, that was equivalent to the meal of one person for a day. And that's what an Omer is. It's enough wheat, barley, harvest, whatever it is, to produce enough bread to be enough for a person to eat in the course of a day, like the man. It was an Omer la Gilgolet. An Omer in the Torah is an asirit ha'efa, is a tenth of an efa. How much do you have to glean in stalks of wheat or barley to be able to produce enough bread to produce enough food for 10 people in the course of a day? She did not walk out of that field with a gleaning here and a gleaning there. She walked out of that field with a truckload of barley. Because she walks into the field, the first thing she says to them is, I'm here to glean, I'm here to take, what's the verse she uses? In Pasuk Zayin, V'tomar la'katana v'asafti bo'omarim. She doesn't talk about leket, she talks about gathering sheaves. She comes into a field, she's a Moabite. What does she know about the etiquette of Israel? What does she know about the etiquette of leket? She sees people harvesting, she sees people gleaning, she walks amongst them, and she grabs whatever she can grab. Now, if you are the na'ar, if you are the people, the nitzav al-kotrim, if you are the harvesters, and some Gentile walks into the field and starts to grab sheaves of wheat and sheaves of barley, not one stalk here, one stalk there, what do you do? What's your normal intuitive reaction? You push back. He said, what are you doing? You don't understand the etiquette. The women are in the back over there together with all the gleaners. You go over there. It's one stalk at a time. That's what you're entitled to. And she said, wait a second, but these harvesters, they're collecting whole sheaves of wheat. Yeah, they're collecting all sheaves of wheat because they belong to the field. So and there's a tumult going on in this field. You understand that she's not collecting what Chazal referred to as chokhmah, one stalk of wheat, two stalks of wheat. She's collecting whole bundles and grabbing whatever she can. She comes out of this field with an efasoim. Because she's a Moabite, and she's caring for her mother-in-law. And she's the only one who cares for her mother-in-law, because nobody else will give her mother-in-law the time of day. Where were all the people of Beit Lechem who stood at the entrance to Beit Lechem and said, Azot Naomi? Where are they in terms of providing tzedakah and food and charity and caring for Naomi? They're nowhere. The only person who cares enough to care about Naomi is Ruth. And she walks into this field and she says, I have two mouths to feed, and I have, and I don't know from any etiquette. All I see is people gleaning, grabbing wheat. I'm going to grab it together with everybody else. So much for the chokhmah of one or two stalks. The bigger question that I want to raise, in the 3 minutes that we have left, is the tsniut. Okay, so let's check. Let's test the theory. How tsanua is she? Okay. So there's an etiquette in the fields of Israel. And the etiquette is the men harvest with the men and the women harvest with the women. I mean, you don't mix the two. Not modern life is very different, but in the fields of those that world, the men and the women did not mix when they were gleaning the fields. Okay? So let's see how this conversation goes. Vayomer Boaz l'Aaron and Nitzav al HaKotzrim. Boaz turned to, now here you're going to have to work off the Hebrew because the English doesn't distinguish between male and female. So I apologize for that. We're going to try to emphasize it in the Hebrew. Boaz comes to Iznar and says, Lemia Nara Azot, who to whom is this Na'ar? And he says, Vayan Hanar Nitzav al HaKotzrim Vayomar Naram Ovia Yisham Mistim Moab. She's a Moabite. Vatomer alaktana va'asafti ba'omarim achareha
kotzrim. Oh my God. Never
noticed. She's sitting there. She says, I want to run with the kotzrim because they've got all the wheat. So Ruth, Boaz calls over Ruth. And he says to Ruth, Halo shemat biti al techilu kotasdeche, my daughter Ruth, listen, you stay here in this field. I will take care of you. Gam lo tavuri mizeh. But do me a favor, stay with my maidens. There's an etiquette in the field of Israel. There's an arim and there's an arot. There's kutzrim and there's milakdot. There's an etiquette. You stay with my maidens. You stay here in this field. You follow them, the female, na'arot. However, no. Tziviti eta ne'arim, I have instructed the ne'arim, right, the boys, livelti nogech, not to touch you. Go backwards. Imply, understand the implication. What did Boaz find when he showed up in the field? He found one woman, one girl, moving amongst the boys and the harvesters, and them pushing her back and say, you don't belong here, get away from here. You know, it's like, lahavdil, can you imagine, you know, you've all been to a circumstance like, a tourist at the kotel who doesn't know what she's doing, and she walks into the men's section of the kotel. You know, there'll be a tumult. So it's exactly what Boaz found in the field. There's a tumult going on. So the first thing he does is he says to the Na'arim, don't touch her. Then he turns to her and says, you know what, my dear Ruth, you stay, Ruth, you stay here, but stay with my maidens. And if you get thirsty, you'll come, you'll drink, the boys will give you water, fine. She falls down, she said, what can I do to repay you, why have you done this, etc. And then he explains what it is, and we're going to come back to, I'm going to end in a moment with these two verses of what it is that Boaz saw in her behavior. In the meantime, Vayomer la Boaz, Boaz says to her, when it comes time to eat, Goshi alom malacht el alechem, come down and have something to eat, Vateshev miyad mitzad hakotzrim. And she sat down together with the kotzrim. Vatakom lelaket, she got up to go glean. What does Boaz say to his ne'arim? Vayomer Boaz on the Arav, Gan ben ha'omarim tilaket v'lo tachlimua. You know what? If she wants to go and glean amongst the sheaves, let her be. Just let her be. Gam tasholu la minetzvatim. Give her a little extra. So be it. Batisa batavoa. Here she comes back to the city. She comes back to her mother-in-law, and she shows a fasorim, a eifa of barley, and Naomi is in shock. Where did you go? And Naomi begins to tell her the story. So take a look. Ruth Moavia says to Naomi, Gam amar elai im ha'ne'arim asher li tidbakin. He said to me, I should continue to glean together with his ne'arim. Now, you saw the text earlier? Boaz did not say, go and glean amongst, together with the Ne'arim. He said, go and glean together with the?
No.
What? She's so far removed from any sense of the modesty protocols of Israel, she doesn't even process it. She doesn't even process it. She says, she hears from Boaz, Ruth got it. That's why Naomi got it. You're right, my daughter. But one thing I need to explain to you. I need to explain to you the protocol and the etiquette. You need to go with the na'arot and not with the na'arim. And the next pasuk, v'tidbak b'na'arot boaz l'laket ad klot k'tziyasovi. Naomi has to explain it to her for her to get it. So I come back to the question. What is it that she saw, that Boaz saw? Boaz saw Chochmah. He doesn't see Chochmah. Chazal say that she was collecting one or two stalks instead of whole bundles. She was running amongst the men, and amongst the officers, grabbing whatever she could grab. Chazal say she was modest. Where's the modesty? So it's a fascinating medrash, because the medrash picks up on exactly the two things that the text says she did not understand. And the Medrash says that's what Boaz saw. Because what the Medrash really is referring to is the fact that Boaz saw what nobody else could see. I'm going to come back to Pasuk Yud Aleph and Yud Bet. When she falls on her face and she says, I am a Gentile, I'm a foreigner, I'm a nobody. Boaz says to her, you're not a nobody. You are unique. Besides the fact that you've created a precedent for all of the women of Moab, but you are unique in two ways. You abandoned all that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband. We talked about the chesed of Yibum a couple of weeks ago. You left your father, your mother, and your land of your birthplace behind. Essentially, he says to her, I see in you two things. Chesed, kindness, and I see in you lech lecha, your willingness to leave your parents' home and join us foreign people. I see in you exactly the two tests that Rivka had to undergo to enter into the Jewish people. I see in you exactly the character traits of Abraham. This is not Moab, who is inhospitable. This is exactly the opposite. This is a woman whose entire life is devoted to the chesed, to her mother-in-law, and to her embrace of a foreign people. She's learning the ropes. She's learning the protocols. She doesn't know the protocols. Chazal says she saw chokhmah and tzniut. He didn't see any chokhmah and he didn't see any tzniut. But he saw a willingness to devote herself to Naomi. May God repay you for your kindness, for these deeds. You have come to seek shelter under God's wings. What Boaz saw, nobody else could see. The rest of the people of Beit Lechem saw a Gentile woman who understood nothing from the protocols of Israel and deserved nothing but to be pushed away and expelled from the land and expelled from the people of Israel and have nothing to do with her because she's nothing but trouble. Boaz saw well beyond the externals of the lack of understanding of tzniut and well beyond the externals of the lack of understanding of the protocols of leket. What Boaz saw in her was her devotion and her kindness and her commitment to her mother-in-law and her willingness to make the journey. The mesirut nefesh of lech lecha and the midah of chesed. And that's all he needed to see. And so I come back to the medrash with which I started. When Chazal say, what did Boaz see in her? Chochmah and tzniut, in the language of the Medrash, classic Midrash. The two things in this chapter that you don't see in Boaz, as are in Ruth, are the chochmah and tzniut, or the behavioral patterns of the Israelites, because Ruth knows nothing of those protocols. But what Boaz saw in her was the story of a woman willing to sacrifice it all for the devotion to Naomi and devotion to the people of Israel. And Boaz was willing to see past what everybody else saw and to see a much deeper understanding of who she truly was. That's the story of Boaz's embrace and what I call the root is the paragon of modesty. When Chazal say, oh, Boaz saw the chokhmah and tzniut. Nobody else did. What everybody else saw was on the externals. What Boaz saw was the core of the story of Ruth. With that, we will finish here. I apologize for having gone over time a few minutes, but I did not want to leave you without the punchline. And so that is the rest of the story. And if people want to continue, stay on and ask questions, I'm happy to do that. I have time. But officially, we'll end here. And Bezrat Hashem, next week, we pick up on one of the most dramatic parts of the story, of course, which is chapter 3 and what went on in the field.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Can I make a comment? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, sure.
Did you say that we have no, in other words, we haven't seen any Moabite women until Ruth?
engaged directly, personally, understand who they are and what they are. She's the first.
How about the fact that in Balak, where the Bnei Yisrael have relations with the Moabi women?
The daughters of
Midianite.
Those are Midianite.
No, it's Midian.
There's Moab.
No, it says Moab.
Yes, yeah. So there's all discussion of it. It's Midian and Moab, etc.
Right.
So I would argue that if there's any precedent of from that generation, it's a negative one. Again, there's a debate whether it's the daughters of Midian or the daughters of Moab. It's their neighboring part, much like Ammon and Moab are one people. Ammon, Moab, Midian are at that period of time interconnected. But the Torah's description as the daughters of Midian, and they go to war with Midian over it, right? Story of Pinchas and the daughters of Midian. Whether the Moab was involved in it, there's a whole discussion, but it certainly was a part of that original context of, okay, so Ammon and Moab are if there's only one thing we know about them, we could go back to that story, maybe. Now we're 400 years later. And 400 years later, there's been no interaction, right? That story in Parshat Balak is the same story in which we're first introduced to Moab directly, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're now 400 years later, and 400 years later, we've had no contact with them whatsoever. Total mystery, who they are on an individual basis. And Ruth is the exact opposite of everything that story represents. Mm-hmm. So that's exactly the point.
My thought
takes a Boaz to see it, but that's exactly the point.
My thought was maybe she's a tikkun, like a direct tikkun for her ancestors, because it even says, like in Balak, it says, "Vayishav Yisrael, b'shitim v'yachal ha'am liznot et benot Moab."
Right.
So they were definitely not sneistic. Moabites were not known for being chesedic, and she's like a complete turnaround. It's like she's a direct tikkun.
So that's true. The question of whether or not that works halachically, but yes, that I think that's true. Again, it comes to the question of whether that reference to Moab is there is really about Moab or about Midian. But I leave that for a different. But yeah,
right.
Sure.
Boaz asks a question of his workers, like, who is this lady who's gleaning in the fields? And
yes.
Then he answers that he really knows what she's done for her mother-in-law and all the devotion. So he obviously knew who she was.
Because he knows her story. She just doesn't know that that's...
No, but he knows her story. So why does he ask, who is she?
Because she didn't know that that's Ruth. He didn't know that lady in the field is Ruth.
Okay.
He walks into his field, which is normally a quiet, tranquil, calm field, and he sees that they're all ablaze about this woman in the middle of it all. So he says to her, who is she? And the moment he says, that's Ruth, that's the Moabite, he puts it all together.
Then he connected the person with the story.
Immediately turns to her and says, okay, come, let's have a conversation. And instead of saying to her, you need to leave, like everybody else said, he says to her, you need to stay. And everybody else needs to behave. And that's basically the gist of it.
Okay.
Could it be that if we identify him as the shofet, like a diptan or whatever, then he decided? Then if the halakha started there as a shofet or whatever, he could have changed.
100%, no question. She is responsible for it, and it gets ruled. But this will deal with Bezrat Hashem. I'm not sure we'll get to it because we're going to run out of shiurim. But if you look at chapter 4, when the conversation with Ploni Amoni, etc., there's no question that the moment he says to Ploni Amoni, okay, you want the field. Here's the field. But now it comes with Ruth.
Yeah, and he doesn't
want. I can't do that because I don't accept Ruth's status. He insists. Okay. And then if you look at the end of the parak, the blessing to her or to the union that's offered by the people of Beit Lechem is that this house should be like Rachel Vilea.
Right.
Which there's a certain recognition of that union, but that's part of the stat. That's why for generations to come, it's still a matter of a question, because how many people accepted Boaz's position, right? They could just as well have said Boaz was made it all up because he wanted to marry her. You know, that's an issue. So we'll deal with next week. Brian, you had a question. Okay. Yeah, I see your hand up.
Yeah. So I accept everything, your conclusion, but there's so much of a contradiction between what Boaz has noticed with her chesed and lech lecha and what it says explicitly in Masechet Shabbat.
Right.
In your first reference.
Because that's so the power of Medrash.
Did he notice it or not notice it?
That's the power of Medrash. The power of Midrashim is to take the ability to take a text and turn it on its head. In the text itself, the two things that are clearly not in her frame of reference are Chochman Sniut. It's clearly, I mean, if you look at the text, there's no question. She knows nothing of the protocols of Israel. And so Chazal saw in Boaz an ability to look and say, okay, everybody else is going to see this, but I'm going to see this. But that's the power of Medrash, right? If I didn't start with that Medrash, I wouldn't have come to the observation that the text speaks the exact opposite language. The text tells what everybody else saw. Chazal saw what Boaz was able to perceive. It's the power of Midrashim. That's why Midrashim are so often misunderstood, because we tend to take them literally instead of delving deeper into what their intended message is.
I understand that. We just in Dirshu finished the Agadas of Rabba Bar Bar Chana and Baba Batra, and that was, I mean, the pshat is, yes, it's very, very interesting.
The Midrashim will often take stories and turn them 180 degrees because there's a deeper message, and so the way they convey that is by taking the story and turning it 180 degrees around.
But that's why if the whole thing was to make legitimacy, then they turned the story around. I know you disagreed with that, but I mean, you know, like obviously they have an agenda.
I disagree with it because Nevi'im don't have agendas. And ultimately when the Gemara...
Chazal don't have agendas either.
But remember the Gemara links the story of Boaz, the story of Ruth and the resolution of the story of Ruth. The Gemara links it to the Beit Midrash, not of Moshe Rabbeinu. When the Gemara says that, oh, kach mukubali, right? It's not a Torah Misina. It's not a halacha l'Moshe Misina. He doesn't say, I received this Masoret from Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, kach mukublani mi Beit Midrasho shel Shmuel HaRamati.
But it's Shmuel that put him on the throne. Come on, you know, it's like you have that. You cannot take that out.
On the contrary.
Who is the one that brought him in?
You're missing my point. On the contrary. Okay. Shmuel wrote Megillat Rut because we needed to understand who Rut truly was. But Shmuel wrote Megillat Rut. He didn't write it by accident. He wrote it as a declaration of the Navi. Because we need to understand what her background was. Because there was such a tendency to see things in the black and white of the world of Ammon and Moab and wars and people. It took the greatness of Boaz and the articulation of the Navi to give it that stamp of approval. So you want to call that legitimate? I don't think it's about legitimizing. I think it's about recognizing the stamp of the Navi. Shmuel, remember, don't forget, Shmuel was not... Shmuel did not put David on the throne because he wanted to put David on the throne. Shmuel put Shaul on the throne because he wanted to put Shaul on the throne. God forced him to put David on the throne. And the moment he does, Shmuel's story ends. Shmuel is the Navi of Shaul. Natan and God are the Navi'im of David. If Natan and God wrote the story of Ruth.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. Okay, you convinced me. That was a good point. He convinced me on that. Okay, that's true. He didn't want to do that. Okay, that was a good answer. I like that. Okay.
All right. Say, we'll stop
okay,
here.
Have thanks.
A wonderful day. Enjoy.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.